Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Okay, welcome folks, and thank you for joining us again on the latest edition, the latest episode of Life on Planet Porky. That's myself, the Porkmeister, with, of course, Leslie Ann Jones. Leslie Ann, it's 10 or 11 weeks now into lockdown. We're all getting cabin fever and going stir crazy. But there are a few green shoots about that we might be able to spread our wings a little in the forthcoming days, if not weeks. So how's it going with yourself?
Not bad. You know, as I always say, I've been a lucky one because I have a house full. There are four of us.
Yeah.
So I have company, unlike other people who have been completely on their own all this time.
Yeah.
And when I went down to Peckham Rye Park at the weekend thinking, oh, I'll have a little walk around, you know, I couldn't even find a parking space and I couldn't see a patch of green grass. It was literally covered with people, groups of families, groups of friends, all sort of having picnics and so on. So everybody's getting out there now.
Yeah. I tell you, Gray, I saw a frightening image this morning. I saw that great TV reporter on travel. You know, he used to work for The Independent. He's the best guy. Everybody knows who he is with his glasses on. I forgot now.
But, you know, but we can't think of his name.
100 times. But you know what I'm talking about, you know.
Yeah.
And he was sitting on an EasyJet plane this morning going from London to Glasgow, which was virtually packed. He's sitting inches away from people on his right and his left, all wearing face masks, I know, but the idea of social distancing, I can't understand why social distancing is still in place for people who want to go to pubs at 2 meters, but it's 2 inches when you're on an aeroplane. None of it seems to add up.
What happened to all this thing about they were going to take out every third seat and space the seats
out
between the sheets, seats and all that? What happened to all that?
No, it's an EasyJet plane and it looked like a normal commuter shuttle run, you know. But anyway, that's all evolving. Now, we've got a couple of birthdays to talk about, haven't we, on this podcast, because my great mate, Alan Brazil, has hit another milestone. I'm not going to reveal his age because Al is that sort of guy who I regard as ageless, and one of your great friends from the rock and pop world, an absolute legend, Noddy Holder, is also celebrating a birthday.
Oh, he is. Happy birthday, Noddy. I'm not sure he'd really want me to say his age, but it's interesting, isn't it, that Merry Christmas, the massive Slade hit, was out for the first time in 1973.
Christmas 1973. I remember being in the King's Head in Lowbridge Street in Chester's, who's booming out of the jukebox, and me and all the other young people there were getting ready for Christmas, and absolutely fabulous, and it's stayed with me ever since. One of the most iconic, certainly the most iconic Christmas record of all time, in my view. Who cares about, you know, White Christmas and all that rubbish? But really one of the most iconic records of my life for the impact it's had, because it comes back every year, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, we host the Scribs launch twice a year, every June, every December. And when Noddy comes down for the December run, he walks into the pub where we hold the lunch and everybody says, lunch on you, Nod, you know, because he makes a fortune out of this record every year.
Yeah, I know. I saw him interviewed one year, a few years ago, and he said, well, it's not that the people keep buying it every year. He said, but usually what happens is one of the supermarkets or somebody comes along, makes him an offer he can't refuse, you know, about £500,000 to take the record and adopt it for their Christmas promotion campaign. So,
oh yeah, and they put, of course, there's all these compilations that come out of the Christmas hits, and you know, as you say, it's used in various films as well.
Yep.
So it's the gift that keeps on giving. Good for him.
It certainly is. As for Mr. Brazil, who I've worked with now for over 20 years, mostly at Talksport, but in television and other things, we do podcasts together and live appearances and all that kind of stuff. But Al's indestructible. I mean, he is completely indestructible. I put out a tweet saying that a lot of people regard me as a medical miracle because of the dodgy ticker I've had for the last 15 years. And I've got diabetes and various ailments like sciatica and all that. But Al is completely indestructible. Al is a social animal beyond compare. Bottle of champagne, maybe, to start livening up the day. A few pints, some lunch, some wine, some red, some white, maybe Bacardi and Coke or something, back to the pub, and that's just normal life. And
do you drink like that every day?
Yes, yes.
How? Mostly. I don't know. Dead.
That's what I'm saying. He's completely indestructible, Al. He hasn't got any
ailments.
What
does his wife say about it?
Well, you know, they've been married for a long time, probably about 40 years or something like that. Certainly Al got married when he was a young footballer, and he's just celebrated his 61st birthday. So,
which you weren't supposed to say.
Well, everybody knows because I put out a picture of Al and me at his 60th birthday bash last year, near to his place in Suffolk. But yes, he's completely indestructible. I've never seen him drunk, right? Literally, never seen him drunk because Al just... his system just mops it all up. You know, he's got an incredible metabolism. But anyway, that's enough of that. Now, talking about famous people, and of course you know very many of them, what do you think of this J.K. Rowling situation, please, Leslie-Ann, where she has actually pointed out, not to put a finer point on it, that menstruation is something that happens to women, not to people of any other gender. And what horrifies me is that the young actors and actresses who she has made multi-millionaires through them appearing in her films, Harry Potter films, have all turned on her.
Well, how dare they, is all I have to say. Whether they agree with her or not about her stance on trans issues, you know, this transgender debate that has been raging all this time,
yep.
They are only famous because she made them so, and they should not be using their platform in this manner.
Yeah.
Why not phone her up and have a discussion about the fact that they disagree with her? You know, they must have her number,
yeah.
As somebody pointed out in one of the papers yesterday. But why make this a public thing? It's just so that they can be seen to be supporting a big cause.
Yes.
And they've shown zero loyalty to her, and I think that's disgraceful.
I think it's utterly disgraceful. Funny enough, I was thinking about the phone number as well. I thought there's only probably about half a dozen people on this earth who've got the private mobile phone number for J.K. Rowling, you know, one of the world's most successful authors, certainly one of the wealthiest, nearly £1 billion in wealth, according to the Sunday Times Rich List. Amongst those who've got her number are all those actors and actresses, the youngsters. I mean, some of them were in their early teen years when she plucked them from obscurity and made them very, very famous. And they turn on her like this. I totally agree with you. They could have rung her up and said, oh, is her name Joanne? It is. We're all known as
Joanne. It is Joanne, yeah.
Joanne.
I call her Joe, I think.
Joe, yeah. Oh, Joe, I'll give you a quick ring. Look, I'm awfully sorry. I really don't agree with what you said on that. And I just thought I'd let you know. But of course, I'm not going public on it and all that, you know. And I totally agree with you. I think it's shocking. Do you think they can ever repair that relationship now?
I'm not sure. Did you read the essay that J.K. wrote? It was published online. The papers picked up on
yes.
it last week.
Yes.
But it was nearly 4,000 words long. She'd obviously researched the subject really deeply
yep.
to have arrived at the views that she presented.
That's right.
And it's a very sensitive issue, yes, transgender. At my daughter's school, for example,
yeah.
in the sixth form, and in a small private school in London, we
yeah.
had 5 girls transitioning in the sixth form. Now, that is a very high percentage. And a lot of people were going around saying, oh, the school's yeah. encouraging it. No, I don't think they were encouraging it, but yeah. I do think that the tolerance level was very high. And I'm that all of these girls were advised properly,
yeah.
and some of them are even now trying to change back. That's how unhappy they are with yeah. the decision that they made. So, you know, there needs to be a lot more advice and counselling
yeah.
and thought gone into these things before people do such a radical thing as change their gender.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, and it's become a huge... So many subjects these days in debate are just hugely controversial because they, you know, you and I grew up in a world where actually we knew the straight lines from the curves that you had to make sure you didn't go around, all that kind of stuff. The rules were quite clear. The rules of existence and life were quite clear, but they're very, very blurred now. And I agree. My great worry is that young people's minds are just being shaped and bent and and put into retrospective by weird theories, which I don't think youngsters need to worry about so much. But anyway.
And also, by the way, if you are, say, for example, failing in your studies and you know you're going to fail your exams, well, let's throw the attention off that by changing gender, shall we? And, you know, it's become a sort of attention-seeking thing as well. I'm not doing down the dilemma of these people who feel they're trapped in the wrong body, or they just simply want to change and try life on the other side, or whatever. There's room for everything. We have to be tolerant in today's world. But I do think young people are vulnerable and they need more help on this subject.
I totally agree. And my final word on this is that we should all have consideration for others. But the problem is our society is now become guilt-ridden, so that minorities get much more consideration. Tiny minorities, because transgender people form a tiny minority, get much more consideration than the vast majority. And that drives me nuts. Of course, I want to look after everybody in society, and I want to look after minorities. But when it then impacts and impounds on the majority, well, that's where I go wrong.
Talking about becomes positive discrimination, doesn't it?
Well, exactly, I agree. Now, talking about famous and wealthy and important women, what a turn up for the book in the Meghan situation, because you'd have thought that with her now going off to America and setting up life there, the court of Queen Meghan and all that, she would stand shoulder to shoulder with her friend, who's been her best friend for about 20 years, I think, Jessica Mulroney, who is the daughter of the former Canadian Prime Minister, Brian Mulroney. But in a very bizarre development, they've now fallen out.
Well, this is because Jessica was obviously presenting a show in the States, I Do Redo. I don't know if you've seen it. I never have. Yeah. But there was a situation where she threatened another woman. This was taken as a racist comment. Mm. And this Jessica Mulroney was fired from her job. And Meghan has now dumped her friend. So what have we got here? We've got she's dumped her dad. Yeah. She's dumped her sister. She's dumped the entire royal family. Mm. And now her best friend. Only Harry and Archie are left.
Yeah.
So, you know, where is this girl taking this thing? Follow the rabbit down the hole. She has to show loyalty on some fronts, because her support network is getting very, very low here.
Yeah. I find it astonishing, because, and also this Jessica Mulroney, I mean, she's a pretty big figure. The I Do Redo is teaching women how to sort of rebuild their lives, isn't it? You know, and come back and all that kind of stuff. But I just don't get it. I'd have thought Meghan had been the first to stand up, because Meghan is of mixed race as well. And the allegation was that Jessica Mulroney had upset somebody else, not by making any reference to race, but by sending her a message which some people thought seemed a bit harsh, you know. I don't know, the world's gone mad. Anyway, look.
Don't you think that Meghan is just putting herself first in every single situation? And this is going to leave her very isolated in the end. I'm losing patience with this girl now.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I lost patience with her when she married into the royal family under the pretense of wanting to become a member of the royal family. But actually, she had ambitions from the start to open up royal family US Hollywood as soon as she possibly could. And that's exactly what she's done. So, yes, I've lost patience as well. Now, Leslie Ann, we've talked often about your membership of the Groucho Club in Soho in London.
I know where this is going.
Yeah, notorious. Yeah. I've been there with you. We've sat there with you. I've always said to you, I find it an uncomfortable place for meetings, because there's all these sort of odd-shaped couches around little tables. And if I'm having a business meeting with somebody, I like to be able to put my elbows on the table, look them in the eye at the same eye level, all that kind of stuff. And they've got a very nice restaurant there and all that. But I've always found it, you know, a good place for oddballs. Now, I don't know how you can be a member of a club where these sort of things happen. Let me read this to you, this disgraceful reference to the Groucho Club in Soho. When Soho's Groucho Club reopens, Damien Hirst, who of course is one of the world's most famous sort of artists, isn't he? Or what is he, a cultural artist or something?
Well, some people call him an artist,
yeah. Yeah, that's right, yeah. He's very wealthy, I know that. Won't be welcome. This is the bloke, of course, who saws cows in half and puts them in perspex boxes full of formaldehyde, doesn't he?
Do you remember Keith Allen, who's the dad of Lily Allen? He's
yes.
the Brilliant actor, actually. He was in Robin Hood, wasn't he? The remake of Robin Hood.
That's right.
And he was in Eddie the Eagle, played Eddie the Eagle's dad. I'm very fond of Keith. He's a hellraiser.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a famous story, who knows if it's true or not, that he and Damien Hirst got all their little children together one weekend.
Yes.
And they gave them a bunch of paint out the garage and a roll of wallpaper and told these kids to just, you know, make merry hell with the paints on the wallpaper.
Yeah.
And then pretended that it was a Damien Hirst original and flogged it for millions.
Oh, it doesn't surprise me. I wouldn't know a piece of art from a non-piece of art these days. I read yesterday that Tracy Emin is worth like several millions, if not tens of millions, all based on her original artistic creation of an unmade bed.
With dirty knickers and used condoms and cigarette ends.
I could do better, I'm sure. If I open my bedroom one day, although mine is usually spick and span and very clean, but I've roughed it up, I'm sure I could do better. Anyway, getting back to Mr. Hirst. When Soho's Groucho Club reopens, Damien Hirst won't be welcome. The shark pickling artist is banned for life after urinating into a pint glass and pouring the contents into the ice making machine.
It wasn't
his trademark formaldehyde. Now, what kind of behaviour is that in any area of life?
I tell you what, I've seen it all in there. I'm a founder member of the Groucho. It's my front room.
Yeah.
I intend to be carried out of there. You know, my last kind of party on earth will be in there.
Yeah.
I have my book launches there and I love the place. I've slept in there loads of times, under chairs, under sofas. You know, we used to wake up in there about 6 o'clock in the morning, walk up to Oxford Circus, go into Topshop, buy a new shirt, grab a toothbrush on the way to the office and turn up in Fleet Street ready for work, having come straight from the Groucho.
Yes.
Been doing this for years.
Not these days, I hope.
Well, no, obviously not. Yeah. But I mean, I once saw a famous journalist who you and I both know.
Yes.
Upside down in a dustbin in the back alley round
Name
the back.
Names.
You know?
Name
no,
names.
I can't. I couldn't possibly. She'll sue us.
Right.
But the best thing I ever saw happen in there was a very famous chef, okay, Marco Pierre White. There was a group of us, you know, Fleet Street journalists and friends and kind of a couple of minor celebrities. And this girl that Marco was trying it on with, she wasn't having any of it. She was not interested.
Right.
And she got up to go to the ladies. Mm. At this point, he stood up, he unzipped his trousers, he plonked his dagger into her glass of champagne. And we're all going, what are you doing that for?
Yeah.
And he said, well, that's the nearest I'm going to get to Rumpy Pumpy with her tonight.
Well, I think that's disgusting.
It is disgusting, but it happened before my very eyes. I love the Groucho for this kind of behaviour. Long may she reign.
That is disgusting. I wouldn't join a club where people did that sort of thing. I mean, that is horrendous. I would have demanded that man be arrested. And you're quite happy to say it's Marco Pierre White.
Well, yeah, it's a private members club, by the way. And what happens in the Groucho stays in the Groucho, although obviously not right here and now.
Yeah. That has really shocked me, Leslie.
Nothing shocks you, Michael.
I know, I'm looking at you in a different light now. But are you going to have your launch party for your Lennon book there?
Absolutely, you're going to come.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So what?
Having said you'd never set foot in the place.
Well, I'll make an exception for your
book
launch.
Oh, thank you. I
won't be taking any ice out of the ice machine after Damon has been pissing
I think they've got a new one.
yeah, well, you'd hope so, wouldn't you? Just talking about that, I was going to talk to you about the Beatles a bit later on in this podcast, but as we got around to that now, I'm delighted to have read that Peter Jackson, who's the award-winning film producer, isn't he? Did he do the Lord of the Rings films and all that?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Very successful. Has gone back on the footage of what was around when Let It Be was made, the very famous Beatles sort of documentary stroke film, culminating in the last ever Beatles public appearance on the roof of Apple in Savile Row in London. He's gone back and got it all, is redoing it all with new techniques and new editing and all that, and it will be coming out again called Get Back. And I read one bit which said the Beatles very nearly didn't go on the roof. They didn't go on the roof because Ringo said it was too cold. George said, what's the point? Paul, of course, was jumping up and down because he loved performing live and wanted to get up there. And there was this deadly silence for about 30 seconds until John Lennon picked up his guitar and said, oh, come on, let's get on with it. And they went up and the rest is history.
Yeah, and I think he had, this is finished now, you know, it's coming out in September.
Yeah.
He had something like, hang on, I'm so sorry.
You're all right,
had
there,
something
dear.
Like, yes, darling, yeah,
I'm
just
drinking
choking
ice
on my
from the ice machine.
Choking on my Earl Grey.
Yeah.
Had something like 55 hours of footage, which were shot at the time, obviously a tiny fraction of which was ever released as the Let It Be film, which was quite a negative sort of film. It didn't portray them in a great light, did it? But this is the ultimate fly on the wall experience they're selling it as now.
Yeah.
And as Ringo says, we weren't fighting all the time,
like
the version that came out. There were many happy hours of us just laughing around and playing music and joking. And there was a lot of joy, he said. And I think that Peter Jackson will have shown that.
Yeah.
I read a quote over the weekend by Danny Harrison, George's son.
Oh, yes.
Who said that this film is so amazing, I could see John Lennon's fillings. Now, do we really need to see John Lennon's fillings?
Well, you can bet your life that if anybody ever got hold of one, it would sell for about £1 million, couldn't you? You know,
do you remember somebody had a tooth of his? This was a dentist a while ago. He'd acquired from an auction an extracted tooth of John Lennon. And he was trying to clone it, to extract the DNA and to clone John Lennon from this tooth.
My God.
This space, they said, but I never heard any more about it.
My God, I don't know. God, blimey.
What is the world coming to?
What is the world coming to? People never start talking about Beatles. I've got a story here, very connected to that, actually. And sadly, I've read in the last couple of days of the death of Ricky Valance, okay? And Ricky Valance was a pop star, immediately sort of pre-Beatle. And do you remember his song, Tell Laura I Love Her? You know, it was...
Yeah, I've heard this song a bit before my time, but...
I was about to say, it's even before my time, believe it or not, because this was towards the end of the 50s, just very start of the 60s. But it was the only record he ever made. It was a cover version of something that we'd done in America, but this song is all about a bloke, you know, in those days he used to ride around on fast motorbikes and all that, getting into a motorbike race to save the honour of his girlfriend, and then he crashes, and his last words before he dies, you shouldn't be laughing at people who've been killed, obviously.
Why are you then?
Exactly, is tell Laura I love her. The problem was, Ricky then thought he'd become a superstar because he got to number one for 3 weeks, but it was literally on the cusp of people like him and Cliff Richard about to become megastars when they were suddenly overtaken by the Beatles and pop groups that had guitars. You see what I mean? So poor old Ricky.
Many careers, were killed by the
Beatles. It did. Poor old Ricky never had another hit. Yeah, it says here that he was number one for 3 weeks, looking for a huge career. But then, unfortunately, he, Cliff Richard, Adam Faith, Elvis Presley and the Everly Brothers all got blitzed by the emergence of rock bands, mostly in this country, you know, which seems a bit of a shame. But what is...
Well, the sign of the times, wasn't it?
Yeah, a complete
sign of the times. The British invasion, and there was no way back from that.
No, you're absolutely right. That's exactly what it happened. And his career ended when it was taken over by the first Beatles release, Love Me Do. And it all went wrong for him after that. But I thought you'd be particularly fond of Ricky because he was born David Spencer in the mining village of Insidhu in Monmouthshire.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's right.
I thought he was American.
He was a sort of English version of Elvis Presley, you know what I mean, when they were all looking for somebody to take over from Elvis. But he went to Insidhu Secondary Modern School, left at 15, to join his father down the pit at 9 Mile Point Colliery. And it was a race home to get in the tin bath before my dad, he said. Fed up with spitting dust everywhere, he took a factory job and then spent time digging ditches while always getting into trouble with the local bobby. All he ever wanted to be was a pop star and finally got his big break. So it kind of Tom Jones story, but sadly didn't end quite as well.
Yeah, I wonder what he ended up doing after that.
Oh, well, he just sort of, you know, he just melted. He ended up doing shows at places like Butlins and all that kind of stuff, you know.
Sad, yeah. Mind you, the Beatles played at Butlins as well, so, you know.
Well, that's absolutely true.
There's no shame in playing at Butlins.
Oh, no shame whatsoever. And our family used to go on holiday to Butlins all the time. So we can.
Are you okay now?
I'm okay now, yeah. Anyway, poor old Ricky died aged 84 after a long illness. good luck to him and his family.
God rest his soul.
Absolutely.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
Right, okay, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today. Leslie Ann, I know that you are particularly grateful and excited about the responses we get to this particular podcast. And I think people from as far away as Australia are now getting in touch, aren't they? And telling us how much they're enjoying your reminiscences.
Got such a nice email from John and Adrian Wells in Sydney over the weekend saying how much they love listening in. So, hi, John and Adrian. And, you know, join us again this week.
Yes.
And good to have you along.
Yes, indeed. I totally agree with that. Now, sadly, we sometimes have to talk about fallen colleagues. And it always, you know, always catches my eye when somebody I've worked with who's died from the sports business because, of course, of your father's long history in that. But did you ever come across a guy called Steve Stammers?
I never met Steve, but I knew of him.
Yes,
my
you
father
would have known of him.
Very fondly of him, yeah. He was one of those kind of proud Cockney characters,
yes,
wasn't he? And he came to prominence at the Evening Standard
during
the Arsene Wenger years, covering Arsenal.
That's right.
A very much an old school football writer, kind, a great storyteller, you know, the kind my dad used to love propping up bars with.
Yes, that's absolutely right. Steve was a lovely guy. And when we were doing radio at TalkSport, you know, in the early days, early-ish days, between about sort of 2002 and 2010, Steve was a regular visitor to the station as a, you know, an expert voice on football. You know what I mean? You're absolutely right. He had almost a monopoly on news coming out of what was Highbury in those days, which is now, of course, the Emirates, a magnificent new stadium. And but he always had a smile. Steve always had a smile. I think he went on to work for some of the Sunday papers, Sunday Mirror, Sunday People, but lovely fella and very sorry to hear that he's gone. Like you say, he will have spent many a long night in Fleet Street bars chatting with your dad. Now, tell me this, Leslie Ann. You know, we see a lot of each other or did before lockdown and a few meals together, a few drinks together and all that. I've never actually heard you worrying, as an awful lot of people do, and I would say particularly women, about your weight. Do you have any problems with your weight? Because I want to tell you the amazing story of the woman who founded Weight Watchers from her bedroom in a little flat in Brooklyn in New York, went on to become a multi-millionaire by playing on the vanity of mostly women about their weight.
Well, I think there can't be a woman on the planet who hasn't been on a diet at some time.
Yeah.
You know, I was always a very skinny mini until I had my first child when I was very young. But when I had my second and third children, I did pile it on. And I've sort of struggled with my weight ever since. I think we could all do with being about 10 pounds lighter. And every now and again, I think I'll go on a sort of detox or a diet and get a few pounds off and feel, oh, good, I can fit into the size 10 trousers again, you know.
Mm.
And then within about a month, it's gone back on because you get lazy, you go out for dinner, as you say, have a few drinks and so on. It's quite hard to maintain that self-starvation thing. And I think that every bit of weight that we take off, we put double back on.
Well,
so there's not much point dieting, really.
I think dieting is such a load of nonsense. I really do. I think it's I think it's a worldwide massive con trick, honestly, dieting. And do you know the other thing that bugs me? Every time some, you know, celebrity decides they're going on a keep fit regime, they publish the person imitating all the moves they're making, you know, the squat thrusts and the press-ups, and they're all exactly the same. It's like they're teaching you something new. It's not. It's all exactly the same. But on the dieting thing, when I first did television on a small TV station that was an online station a few years back, I took it seriously, and I lost about a stone and a half purely...
And then put three back on, yeah.
Well, I have these days, yeah. It's much harder to... As you get older, it becomes very much harder to lose weight. But that was probably about 10 years ago. And I lost a stone and a half, 2 stones. I looked better. I looked slimmer. My clothes started hanging on my shoulders rather than my shoulders bulging into them. You know what I mean? And I did that all by eating just lean meats, drinking just white wine, but not, you know, in copious quantities of, and a lot of exercise. And it worked. And I've tried to do that again with lockdown. I thought, right, great opportunity to take some exercise, to moderate my diet, because obviously when we're out and about, you eat fast food or you eat in Chinese restaurants or you go into the pub and eat, you know, fish and chips or something like that. So I've done all of that and I haven't lost a single pound. And I think it's just so much more difficult when you're older. Everybody has middle age spread and there's nothing you can do about it.
No, there isn't. I think it is pointless because we get into this thing of, you know, this routine of gotta lose a stone, gotta lose a stone.
Yeah.
And you starve yourself. The minute you start eating normally again, it goes back on.
Yeah.
I think there is, Joan Collins said to me once, you know, her secret, because she's very slender. And I said, what is your secret?
Yes.
She said, I don't diet. She said, if I need to slim my tummy down to fit into a costume or something for a play or a film, she said, I go on a few days of eating hard-boiled eggs and broccoli,
right?
And that gets it off. She said, but you know, you need half the amount of food at 50 as you needed at 25, and you need half the amount again at 75 as you needed at 50. So she said, you know, we're not growing anymore. We need to cut down the amount that we eat, but we can pretty much eat whatever we want, but we have to exercise more. And she exercises religiously every single day. And look at, I mean, she's in her 80s. She looks fantastic.
Oh, she looks absolutely fantastic.
She is my role model. I think I try and cut down on the cakes and the sweets and all those kind of things. Obviously, I fall prey to everything like everyone else now and again.
Yeah.
But that is the thing. Eat less, exercise more.
I totally agree. My poor old mum, who I love dearly, and it's her birthday this week, actually, and she died two years
God
ago.
God rest her soul.
Yeah, but she, you're absolutely right. She became a little old woman, you know what I mean? And she became a bit stooped, and she was definitely getting smaller. And, you know, my sister Jill, who lived near in Bournemouth, would be horrified sometimes to get round there and find that all mum had to eat for the whole of the previous day was a boiled egg, you know, because, as you quite rightly say, you get older, you don't need as much nutrition. But anyway, getting to Weight Watchers, fascinating story. New York housewife Jean Nidetch, N-I-D-E-T-C-H. Out browsing the shops one day in the autumn of 1961 when something happened that would change her life. She was spotted by a neighbour who came over to compliment her on her marvellous appearance and asked her if she was having a baby. The woman had got very fat. That
must
be the worst thing that can happen to a woman, being asked, when are you expecting all that?
When is it due?
When are you due?
I'm just fat, thank you.
This prompted a light bulb went off in her head. And from her back bedroom in Brooklyn, she started to recruit people to come and join her to talk about losing weight and all that. She then decided to make it a business, called it Weight Watchers. At the first meeting she called, she found a hire of a room nearby, you know, a loft above a shop, and put out 50 chairs. And over 400 women turned up from a small advert in a local newspaper, okay? Blimey.
Ding!
You thought,
ka-ching!
Within 5 years, she was holding conventions at Madison Square Garden. Can you imagine that?
Amazing.
You've been to Madison Square Garden, I bet, haven't
you? Oh, lots of times,
That's what I mean. And that was Weight Watchers. She made,
but not to lose weight, I hasten to add.
No, exactly. Yeah, I totally. I saw Sinead O'Connor there in that famous concert when she ripped up the picture of the Pope, you know?
Oh, did you?
She did that on the breakfast show that morning, and she was due on stage that night, and she did it again. She made huge success of it and eventually ended up with a multi-million pound fortune when it was bought out for about 56 million quid in those days by Heinz. And this is an interesting story for me because of connections. Heinz was then run by a guy called Tony O'Reilly. And Tony O'Reilly was an Irishman who'd been a very, very successful businessman as well. He was an Irishman, but he took over Heinz. He was chairman and CEO of Heinz in America, terribly successful and all that. But where I met him was back in England one time at some sporting do, big probably rugby or something, because he bought the independent newspapers. Do you remember?
Oh, yes, I do. Yeah.
Yeah. And when they were proper newspapers, you know, I think they're sort of online editions now and The Eye and all that kind of stuff. But yes. It's just a fascinating story because this woman, Ms. Nidetch, right, when she no longer had a sort of day-to-day role in the business, she went off to Las Vegas and she spent all her money. She gambled it all away.
You know, it reminded me of that woman who won the pools, Viv Nicholson.
Viv Nicholson, spend.
Do you remember
spend,
they made
spend.
That spend? Yeah. And it was very much easy come, easy go. Or in the case of losing weight, easy go, easy come.
Yeah, right.
She put it all back on.
Yeah, absolutely right. I think winning the pools and spending all your money like that. You know, there's that revolting yobbo guy who won about 11 million quid, and he started buying country houses and using them as stock car racing venues and all that kind of stuff. He's a horrible guy. He lost all his money and ended up as a bin man. He won 11 million and ended up back as a bin man.
How does this happen? Why is it always those kind of people that win these vast sums?
I don't know.
You know, why doesn't it come to sensible people like us?
Exactly.
Who would do good things with it?
Yeah, but when you're getting down to, you know, when you've got 11 and you get down to about 5, don't you think, actually, I better put the brake on this now?
Spending. Yeah, or exactly. Else
and then when you get down to 2, you know, you think, oh, it's still going. I'm going to really have to put the brake on. Then when you get to 1, I mean, most people, right, can live the rest of their life if they've got £1 million in the bank.
Definitely. Just lock the front door. Don't spend a thing.
Exactly. But anyway, she didn't end up in poverty. She ended up living in a suite somewhere in Las Vegas. You know what I mean? Like Howard Hughes type style. But I think she just sort of, from the review I've read of the book about her, I think she just planned to just spend it as she went, and she liked gambling, you know, and so she did. So I suppose it's horses for courses and all that sort of stuff. Once gambling gets you, you're in real trouble, aren't you?
Never having been a gambler. I mean, I do the lottery like everybody else, but yeah. My dad liked to flutter on the horses, but it was only ever 50 quid here, 50 quid there. It was not a big deal, but I suppose it is an addiction. But is there such a thing as an addiction? I've often wondered about that. Can we not exert our self-control and get over these things?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I only gamble a little bit on horses, on big races, like Derby and Grand National. It's Royal Ascot this week, by the way. So I've been asked to do some pieces on that, on my gambling fancies, which is ridiculous. I don't know anything about horses, but I'm there to entertain people. And so I happily
which
will.
Which is what you do best, MP.
Yes, exactly. Now, tell me this. Are you a pal or have you been a working associate of Janet Street Porter?
Oh, God. Yes. I have.
And have you had any unfortunate experiences?
Well, she's very forthright and she speaks her mind, doesn't she? And she doesn't suffer fools. When I knew her, she was dating Tony James, who was the one of the musicians in Zig Sputnik. Do you remember them?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Yeah. And she was head of Youth Telly way back in the distant beyond. I found her very fierce.
Yeah.
I think she was working at The Independent on Sunday at one point.
She became the editor. She did.
We
had no newspaper experience. She was made editor of The Independent on Sunday.
Well, that's what they call a Groucho Club appointment.
Yes, of course.
Because Simon Kellner used to hang around with her in the bar there. And
that's right.
Late one night, pissed, he offered her a job.
Yes, that's right. That's exactly what happened, I think. I've done that a few times. I once offered a bloke, I mean, all those little clubs around Fleet Street would used to open till 2 or 3 in the morning, you know, and that was mostly for the fact that the night editors didn't finish till about 11, you know, so they used to come. But I remember one night I got so pissed in this club and I offered somebody from the Express, of which I was the news editor, the job as education correspondent. And I had no idea I'd done this. Until the bloke approached me the next day, you know, and said he wanted to get started as quickly as possible. And I actually said, what on? He said, my new role. I said, enlighten me, what is your new role? And he said, you made me the education correspondent. And I said, I'm sorry, it's been a change of plan. I mean, honestly, I couldn't even remember.
That reminds me of a publisher I had once who called me in a terrible state just after their office Christmas party. And he said, I think I'm in trouble. I said, why? He said, in my vague drunken memory from last night, I know that I proposed to somebody at the office Christmas party.
Right.
And he said, this morning, three women in succession came into my office to follow me off on it. So he'd proposed to three women at one Christmas party.
What? Is this guy in a position of seniority?
Yeah, he owned the publishing house.
Oh, my God. Because these days, of course, that would get you into terrible trouble, wouldn't it?
Oh, it did. His wife left him.
Right, yeah. Well, yeah, that is definitely a problem. But I meant within your own company, you'd be, you know, hauled across the coals and told that you'd belittled female employees and all this kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Oh, crossing lines. Yes, we can't do any of that these days.
Quite rightly as well. But that is terrible behaviour. In fact, one of these days when we've got a bit more time on another podcast, I will tell you about a time when I inadvertently proposed to a lady.
Wow, I need to hear this. I've never heard Mike Parry proposal story before.
Yeah, well, we're going to have to leave it till we've got more time. It's quite a long story.
Oh, because, keeps me hanging on.
Yeah, because what I was going to say about Janet Street's portraits, did you know...
Or Street Cleaner, as we used to call her.
What, you used to call her what?
Janet Street Cleaner.
Janet Street Cleaner, yeah, that's right. She's very prominent teeth. And one time, a newspaper editor... actually put a picture of her in the paper alongside Red Rum, you know, with his...
Oh, that's harsh.
I know, with, you know, Red Rum, the horse baring its teeth, and said, you know, which one of these looks like the more trustworthy individual and all this kind of stuff.
Oh, I mean, no, you couldn't get away with that nowadays. No,
of course you couldn't.
And
you shouldn't either. You shouldn't.
No, I agree.
I would never insult a woman.
She can't help her teeth.
No, she can't help her teeth at all. Anyway, point of my story is that she also became, I think, national president of the Ramblers. And used to fight.
Yeah, yeah, she likes a walk.
Yeah, used to fight against, you know, footpaths being closed down, all that kind of stuff, which I'm all for. But the only reason I mention this, the only reason, we've talked about it now for 5 minutes, she's been reading a book about what they do in Finland and has revealed a new initiative from Finland, the world's happiest country. Can cold water and crocheting really banish the quarantine blues? And she points out life in Finland, a particular aspect of it, of which I'm very much in favour, that the first 30 minutes of your day are the most crucial part of that day. The first half hour, the first 30 minutes. And I so totally agree with that, Leslie-Ann. If I get up at 5:30, I've got 14 things done by the time it's 6 o'clock, honestly. I have to. I have to. That's when I've got maximum power and energy in my body. And that's when I've got to honestly go for it. And I get so much done. What I do in the first half hour of my day completes work that would take 3 or 4 hours if I left it until starting at 10 o'clock.
I tell you what, though, there was one of those, I love these train journeys that are on television at the moment.
Yes.
Great train journeys of the world.
Yeah.
And there's one narrated by Bill Nye, who I love. And they went into Finland the other day on the latest one that I watched. And these people were all getting up at crack of dawn, as you say. They were having a sauna in the, you know, sort of boiling their blood in these saunas and then coming outside, smashing the ice on the lake and jumping into this freezing cold water. I would have a heart attack if I did that.
No, that'd be great. I'd love that.
Actually do that?
Sorry?
Would you? You would do that?
Oh, I would do that, definitely. And you know, when I've lived in apartment blocks that have had swimming pool and all that, that's the first thing I do. There's nobody ever there early in the morning. And when I was in Washington, I lived in a block on Pennsylvania Avenue, actually, the same street that the President of the United
States... Number 65000,
was on. Say again.
Yeah, number 65000.
No, because he lives at 1600. You're absolutely right. I lived at number 617 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Close.
And it was dog leg away, if you see what I mean. When you come out the White House and turn right, then you turn right again, then you turn left onto the Mall, and the Capitol is at the top there. You know what I mean? And I lived halfway up towards the Capitol. But no, I used to jump into swimming pool every morning and get done. But what I mean is...
Get done.
You know, get my head sorted and...
Oh, okay, yeah. No, I love swimming. I think there's a lot to be said for swimming in terms of clearing one's head and preparing for the day. I would love, my luxury would be a swimming pool. I would love to have my own pool.
Yeah. The only trouble is with swimming pools, of course, they're chlorinated. And so you get that sort of chlorination. It'd be much nicer if we all lived in forests in Finland. You could, you know, jump into these beautiful, clear pools of water.
Oh, couldn't agree more. Should we move to Finland?
Good idea. Janet Streetport is very dismissive of Finland, by the way. She says, you know, it's a country where, oh, you know, it's just miles and miles of forest, which all looks the same, and these roads full of snow and all that kind of stuff, you know. But she makes the point about the Finnish way of life. First thing you do is do your emails. Then you check if you got any phone calls overnight, messages, Skype, all sorry, not Skype. What's that? WhatsApp, you know, the green one on your phone and all that. Get all that done out the way. And then I get going and sort out everything I've got to get done for the day, you know, and I'm halfway through a day's work by 5 to 6, believe me.
Admirable. You're a pillar of, example to us all, Michael. Yeah,
well, I hope so. But the point is, I think as you get older, I'm trying to struggle here to put it into words. I think...
articulate, love.
Yeah,
articulate,
yeah. I think that you need to use all that energy very early on. Really very early on, because you're out of it as the day folds. Anyway, listen, I want to talk to you about Ricky Gervais. Is he a friend of yours?
No, never come across him. I don't really like watching him, to be honest.
No, I don't either much. I quite liked The Office, but everybody sort of greeted it as the greatest ever, you know, comedy. And
I just didn't get it. I don't like shows that send people up and make fun of them.
Yeah, I could see some elements of humour in it, but I couldn't work out whether it's supposed to be like a documentary or real or...
Not funny to me. Sorry, it wasn't.
Anyway, he's made millions and good luck to him. I like
good luck to him.
And he's got a series of new shows now that Netflix have given him $5 million for. It's called Afterlife.
It's tough at the top, isn't it? Yeah.
But listen, the reason I mention it is because he's given a bit of an interview in which he says wherever he goes in the world, the first thing he has to do is establish that in the town he's working, he needs an Italian restaurant. He won't eat local food. He'll only eat Italian. And do you know what? I completely and utterly support him there. Completely and utterly support him. I never try local food. I was in Pakistan once and I didn't want to try Pakistan food because I've got a very sensitive stomach. I was in Mexico and I didn't touch a tortilla or anything else. In Mexico, when I was in... what's a famous resort, you know, where they jump off the cliffs and all that?
Bahia or somewhere?
No, you know what I'm talking about. Acapulco.
There, yeah.
And I went every day to Pizza Hut in Acapulco. When I was in Tenerife once, not Tenerife, that volcanic island, which is in the same bunch of islands. What's it called? I don't know. But anyway, there was a Chinese restaurant there. A bit back from the front, and I went there every day.
Back from the front. Now that I've heard it all, now
no, you know, I mean,
you're a bit back from the front today, Mike.
Yeah, that's right. But it wasn't actually on the seashore. If you see what I mean, it was a few roads back. And I used that every day. Chinese restaurant, great Chinese food. Pizza Hut, great pizza food. Italians, yeah, I'll go for them. But I just don't like local food in most of the place. I can't eat German
but
food.
Italian food is local food in Italy.
Yes, I
so why doesn't he just move to Italy?
Well, yeah, no, because there's Italian restaurants in this country as well. I mean, if I'm in Germany, I don't eat German food. I don't like German food, you know.
So you'll go to Germany and eat Chinese food or Italian food. That's a bit arse about face, to be honest.
Yeah, I suppose it is. But they're Chinese people who are cooking it, if you see what I mean. So they're obviously Chinese... food is cooked the same by Chinese people all around the world. If I go to Greece, I don't like Greek food. It's too much garlic and all that kind of stuff, you know.
You're like Shirley Valentine. You want the chips and eggs.
Yes, I do, yeah. I find nothing wrong with the full English breakfast misspelt on a blackboard in Benidorm and the smell of bacon and sausage wafting out from the, from the cafe.
You might as well stay here then.
Well, I do a lot of the time. I do.
No.
I mean, I think one thing we've all got to do when lockdown is lifted, by the way, is just go and look at those parts of the country which we've never been to. We spent all our time, you and I, flying around the world for a lot of our lives, maybe 10 or 20 years, and going to exotic places. And you know what? I wish I'd spent some time on the Norfolk Broads, in the Scottish Highlands, in the Welsh Valleys. I really do. And I'm going to do more of that when we get going.
Yeah, me too. But I will be going to China. You did ask me what would be the first place I would travel to when this is all over.
That's right.
My daughter's got a job teaching English in Guangzhou. which used to be Canton in southern China. Yeah. And I had promised her an exotic trip for her 21st birthday. So instead of us going away together, I'm going to travel to Guangzhou to see her.
Oh, lovely. Well, well done. That's terrific. And it'll be a very, very exciting visit. Right-ho, Leslie. And that brings us to another end of our latest...
Can't possibly be, can it?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. So perhaps you could tell everybody how they get hold of you, like that super fan of yours from Australia.
Oh, bless them. It's, yeah, on Twitter, at LAJWriter.
Absolutely. I'm Mike Parry. It's, what is it? It's at Mike Parry 8. So look forward to hearing from you. And we have a universal address, which is on Gmail, which is planetporkypod@gmail.co. We look forward to hearing from you. Leslie Ann, once again, thank you for being with me, and stay safe.
Stay safe to you. At this point, he stood up, he unzipped his trousers, he plonked his dagger into her glass of champagne. We're all going, what? What are you doing that for?
Yeah.
And he said, well, that's the nearest I'm going to get to Rumpy Pumpy with her tonight.
Well, I think that's disgusting.
It is disgusting, but it happened before my very eyes. I love the Groucho for this kind of behaviour. Long may she reign.
That is disgusting. I wouldn't join a club where people did that sort of thing. I mean, that is horrendous. I would have demanded that man be arrested.
That reminds me of a publisher I had once who called me in a terrible state just after their office Christmas party. And he said, I think I'm in trouble. I said, why? He said, in my vague drunken memory from last night, I know that I proposed to somebody at the office Christmas party.
Right.
And he said, this morning, three women in succession came into my office to follow me off on it. So he'd proposed to three women at one Christmas party.
What? Is this guy in a position of seniority?
Yeah, he owns the publishing house.
Oh, my God. Because these days, of course, that would get you into terrible trouble, wouldn't it?
Oh, it did. His wife left him.
Right, yeah. They're obviously Chinese... food is cooked the same by Chinese people all around the world.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.